And good afternoon. My name is Amy Toy. I'm the host of Angel Answers. And I have a very, very awesome guest today. Her name is Sherry Cortland. She's a self-proclaimed spiritual growth accelerator and secretary to spirit. And she does this through automatic writing. She channels and shares information communicated by her Gigi, and we'll go into that abbreviation in a minute, in her books and workshops, with the express intention of providing tools that you can use for, one, expedite your spiritual growth and complete your to-do list for this incarnation with less drama and pain, and two, to increase your vibrational level and positive energy output to make this completion of the shift easier for everyone on our planet. And this is a third in her series of books. This book is, I think this is a great, this is a kick-me-in-the-butt book. It's called Spiritual Toolbox, Are You Ready to Put on Your Big Lightworker Pants? And this is, her first two books were Windows of Opportunity and Raising Our Vibrations for the New Age. Welcome, Sherry. How are you today?
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Amy. It's such a thrill to be on your show.
Oh, thank you, Sherry, for the wonderful information in this book. Sherry, I always like to ask my guests, how did you start on this path to spiritual enlightenment, if you will? And, lightworker path here, we'll call it that.
Oh, that's a good term for it, actually. Well, you know, it was back in the 80s, and I was reading a lot of Ruth Montgomery at the time. The Shirley MacLaine books were out, the Seth books were out. I mean, there were a lot of books out. And I remember that I started to think about and wonder, why are we here on this planet? And why is there so much suffering? And why do we have to go through so much nonsense, you know? And so I kind of started my journey for two reasons. One, because I wanted to find out the truth about why we're here. Who are we really and why are we here? And then secondly, I think maybe I was a little jealous of Ruth Montgomery, and I loved the way that she sat down at her kitchen table and wrote with her guide Lily, and I wanted that same thing too. I wanted to be able to have direct contact with my guides.
So what is the abbreviation GG stand for? Can you explain this? Yeah, I like that, the GG, yeah.
That shows what a terrible lack of imagination I have. It stands for guide group.
Yes.
I have no imagination.
Oh, it's okay. Well, you know what? Some people don't need imagination to get their point across. When this first came around, when I saw this announcement, Spiritual Toolbox, Are You Ready to Put Your Big Lightworker Pants On? How did you come up with that, such a kick in the pants, so to speak?
Yeah, I didn't come up with it myself, really. The guide group, the GG for this book did. And it's because what I'm getting now from my guide group is that, you know, there are so many wonderful, fantastic books out there, and we've all done so much reading, and it's time now to take everything that we've read and everything that we've absorbed, and we need to put it into action. The time for action is now. So Spiritual Toolbox is not really about reading, it's about doing. And what the guide group tried to do here is to put together almost like a manual of sorts to help people move forward, to stop with the reading and start with the action.
Right, because we can read all these books and become so-called enlightened, and in reality, we need to do the action. So let's talk a little bit about the automatic writing. Mm-hmm. How do you go into it, and how did you start this? Because some people don't even know what automatic writing is, and someone maybe look into that?
Automatic writing is just one of many ways to channel spirit. And you can channel your higher self, you can channel your guides, you can even channel the angelic realm with automatic writing. And, boy, I'm just going to make myself look very bad because you already know I don't have an imagination, and now I'm going to tell you how lazy I am because automatic writing, to me, it's my favorite way because it's just so easy. You sit down with a pen and paper or you sit down at the computer and you just clear your mind and you let spirit use your hands to write, to deliver messages, to channel. So it's like the lazy girl's way of channeling in a way. So that's what automatic writing is. And I got started because, again, I read the Ruth Montgomery books. I loved the way that she sat down at her kitchen table and she chatted with Lily and then later on Arthur Ford. And I just decided, hey, I want to do this. And so, Amy, I tried for 3 months. For 3 months, I sat down at my kitchen table, and you know what happened?
What? It happened.
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So my best advice to folks who want to start with automatic writing is to have patience and persistence, because for 3 months I got nothing, and then one night I was in a workshop, and the teacher said, tonight we're going to try automatic writing. And snarky little thing that I am, I started to laugh out loud, and I said, oh, that's not going to happen for me. I've already been trying that. And as those snarky words were coming out of my mouth, something grabbed a hold of my arm and my hand, and I started drawing the most beautiful circles you could ever see in your life. And the whole class started kind of gathering around me, and they're watching my hand, and I'm watching my hand too, because, you know, it didn't really feel like it was my hand at that moment. And we're all just, look at this, you know. And the teacher yells from across the room, Sherry, control it. And I said, control it? We haven't had the class yet. I don't know how to control it.
I love it. I love it, because that's how I am too. It's funny because you argue with your spirit guides as well. I do that.
Sure.
All the time. It's like, no, it won't be easy with working with me. But when you're working, I just wanted to bring out a point with automatic writing. It's very important that, you bring it up in the book too, that whoever you're channeling or whatever, you ask what their relationship is to you. And I always ask, are you of the light? Because you don't know what's coming through sometimes.
Well, that's true. And, you know, in each one of my books, in the chapters on automatic writing, I give instructions on how to do it. And anybody who's listening, if they'll send me an email through my website, I will happily send them instructions on how to do automatic writing. They don't even have to buy the book. But one of the things that I do believe, Amy, is that high vibration entities attract high vibration entities. But even so, it doesn't hurt to say a little prayer of protection. So that is something that I always do, and I recommend to folks that they do. And then, you know, if a stranger came up to us on the street and started chatting with us, wouldn't we ask, hey, who are you? Who are you, and how do I know you? Well, we have the same right to ask that as spirit. So I'm with you, Amy. Always ask who it is, and always ask what the relationship is.
I usually get a sarcastic, like, you know who I am. We've worked in other lifetimes. Yeah, enlighten me, okay?
Yeah,
you know.
I've gotten that, too. They think they're so smart because they're not stuck in body, right?
Yeah, really. It's like, no, you got to deal with a sinus infection, dude, you know? But I always get mad at I argue with mine all the time. Let's get
Did
a little
ever
bit.
Win?
No. Actually,
no.
They're always right. Yeah. No. But I learned how to debate, so that's good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I got some characters out of us, you know. Anyway, my guides are fun.
That's something that a lot of folks don't realize, you know. They think it has to be just, you know, A, B, C, D, and that spirit doesn't have a sense of humor. But spirit does have a sense of humor, and it's a lot of fun to work with them.
Oh, yeah, especially when I have a poet guy that I'll start channeling, and they'll start doing in poems and stanzas.
How cool
like,
is
okay.
that?
Oh, yeah, that's cool, right? And my friends are like, okay, we know that some so-and-so's coming out. Let's talk a little bit for a minute. Let's get into the more serious side. You talk about the 2012 shift, especially of December. What is the difference between 3D Earth, as your guides call it, or 5D Earth? You want to explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, there was a lot going on, if you think about it, for the last few years, really up through December 2012, where many, many people felt that they were going to shift, and they were going to shift from 3D Earth, which is where we are right now, onto 5D Earth, and things were going to be so wonderful and fabulous for everybody. And I tried for a very long time to say it's not going to be what you're thinking here. We can't all just up and transition from 3D Earth. That would leave such a big hole, such a gap. So many plans would go, you know, with us unable to complete them. 5D Earth is just another dimension of Earth, and it already exists. It is there. But as far as us transitioning to it, when we leave these bodies, we go back to the other side. We commune with our higher self for a little bit. We might travel the universe. We might take some classes. We'll hang out with our friends. And then when we're good and ready and we've decided what it is that we want to pursue for the next lifetime, what we want to learn, what experiences we want to have, then we'll decide where is it that we want to incarnate. And that could be 3D Earth again. It could be 5D Earth. It could be on the outer ring of Saturn. It's wherever is best for us, for what we want to learn and accomplish in our next lifetime. And we cannot just transition from 3D Earth to 5D Earth. It doesn't happen that way. First, we go back to the other side. We commune, and then we go there if that's where we need to be. But there was so much talk about 5D Earth and just everyone, you know, waiting to transition that I had to address it in this new book. You know, I just asked them, I said, why haven't all the light workers of the world transitioned to 5D Earth? And what they said was that there have been a lot of transitions where many, many people have left their bodies. They've gone back to the other side. Maybe they will go to 5D Earth, but they're not going to go direct. But there's no sense in leaving all these wonderful bodies when we have many, many entities now from the other side who can walk into those bodies, entities who don't have to bother going through childhood. You know, we've got the indigos, we've got the crystals, we've got the rainbows, and then we also have walk-ins who are very high vibration entities who come into body to help the planet and to help mankind and to help us evolve. So there's a lot of walk-in situations that were created by folks who did leave their bodies, but the bodies still remained. So it looks like there was no big transition. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I just want to explain for the audience because there was a lot of clamorings, like you said, about the summer 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an interesting situation, when I'm like I said, I'm going to be jumping around a little bit here.
Sure.
The walk-in situation. Now, I had a near-death experience in 2000, and I believe I'm a walk-in.
Okay.
No, I really do, because let's talk about walk-ins, what they really are, how do you know if you're a walk-in. I really would be interested in that, because I really do feel I am one, even though one of my psychic friends don't believe it, but I do. So
I would be thrilled to talk about that. Just shut me up whenever I'm talking too much, okay? Because otherwise
I will go on and on.
Well, a walk-in situation occurs when an evolved soul, not currently incarnated, is allowed to switch or exchange places with a soul that is currently in body. So the two souls essentially change places, and they do so by mutual agreement. No, what's important here is that nobody is forcing anybody out of their body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can take over. There is no possession scenario going on here.
Right.
And the purpose of a walk-in situation is that it allows two souls to continue on their journeys. And ultimately, it allows a highly evolved soul to enter as an adult and start their work to help others and our planet almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like when I had my near-death experience, mm-hmm. I remember waking up because I had a car accident. And I remember waking up not recognizing the energy. It was
right.
Like, I remember seeing the white light, and my mother, it was really odd. It was like, I didn't even, you know, and as I've gone along my journey, they feel like a family of strangers to me. So, but it's just really odd, and that's one of the symptoms of walking, correct? There's like, there's a family of strangers, or you're in a,
absolutely.
It was very odd. It was just,
and in this new book, Spiritual Toolbox, I interviewed a woman named Sarah, who is a walk-in. And there's an entire interview with her in the book. But one of the things that she shared with me, because I asked her, I said, what was it like when you woke up in your new body? And she said that when she woke up that morning, she was very, very confused. And she remembers thinking, what is this place? Who is this guy laying next to me?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then she said that a blonde-haired boy, a young boy, walked past the room and said, hi, Mom. And she said that she could just immediately relate to him and that he was key for her, kind of grounding her a little bit. And she realized about the exchange had taken place. But something else that she said, and something that I have found with a lot of walk-ins that I've talked to, is that when they do come into body, a lot of times they have to take care of the karma and whatever the outgoing soul hasn't quite taken care of yet. So first they finish up all that stuff for the outgoing soul, and then they get to work on their stuff. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree with that, believe me. Yes, I've, there was a lot of karma that, it was weird because I saw the life review, but it was like, it wasn't even me. It was weird. It's just, now that I, it's very odd. Yeah, there was a lot of karma. I think the first 5 or 6 years, a lot of karma.
Yeah, it's not a quick thing sometimes to take care of that karma. There's a lot that has to be done, and you've got to take care of that first before you can get to your mission, which, well, you're obviously doing right now, which is teaching and assisting humankind.
Right, well, that's when my psychic abilities opened up again, quote-unquote. You know, because I was psychic, well, the whoever was psychic as a child would shut it down, and then it was like a totally, it's like, you can't explain it. You have to go through it.
I know. Well, Shirley Beatty, she is an author. She's in England. She is an international metaphysical teacher and a healer and a channeler. And she is somebody that I also interviewed for this book. And she talks about how sometimes people who have had a terminal illness, folks who have survived a terminal illness, and then they kind of have a new lease on life, you know, and they're just totally different. A lot of times folks wake up from a car accident or an illness, you know, they were in a coma, and they often just seem like a completely changed person to everyone who knew them before. And a walk-in does retain, my understanding is that they do retain all of the memories and experiences of the soul that they've exchanged places with. But that sometimes, too, there can be glitches or behaviors that will indicate that an exchange has taken place. So Shirley actually gave me a couple of things that you can look at to help determine if you or somebody that you know is a walk-in.
Yeah, there is some memory gaps that I thought maybe they were too traumatic. I don't remember certain things with some individuals in my family. It's very odd.
She says that you feel totally different. You never quite feel like yourself. Did that happen to you?
Oh, yeah, it was.
To feel uncomfortable and like you're an outsider with your friends and family?
Yeah, well, yes.
And interests and hobbies change drastically?
Yes.
And then the memory lapses, of course. And this is when she says that that happens for almost everyone, that you find yourself suddenly wanting to help other people.
Yes. Yeah, it was. I wanted to use my abilities to help people, and that's what I've been doing.
And being extra concerned about the state of the planet.
Yes. So some things to look for. Yeah, well, yes, you know, like I said, most of my friends say yes, and I had one friend say no, I don't think you're a walk-in, and I'm like, no, something's not right here. So you got to follow your own intuition. I believe in that.
Yeah, you do. Well, or just saying, ask your guides.
They say yes.
Yeah, well, there you go. Then you know. Then you know.
Yeah, you definitely know. Yeah, because I was reading that section. They're like, that's you, that's you, that's you. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, so being a walk-in, well, you know, it was, it's just an interesting experience. So, yeah, well, I finished up the former Amy's karma. So,
of course. Yeah. And, you know, it seems like an easy thing to do to come into body and not have to go through babyhood and childhood. But you have to take care of all of these things, all of this karma with family and friends that you had no part in creating. But here you are. You've got to clean it up. That's part of what you've agreed to do. That's a lot of work, and I think very hard work, too.
Oh, it is, because, you know, there, you know, you have parents that are looking at you like, how come you're not acting like the old person, that, you know, the old former person? You're like, I don't know, I'm just acting myself here. And
yeah,
you're
so
finding yourself, yeah.
It's not like you're getting a free ride because you get to be a walk-in, I guess is my point. You still have so much work to do.
Oh, yeah, I think you have a lot of work to do, and it's just an interesting kind of take on things, and, you know, I think that that's part of the journey, I believe, so. But I wanted to talk about a little bit, too. I'm skipping around a little bit, Sherry.
Yeah.
One time I had a friend of mine ask about it, the soul and the higher self. And you talk about this, that the soul can split. Can you explain that in the higher self? You said we leave
yes.
a part of our higher self on the other side. Let's explain mm-hmm. that to people a little bit, because that was channeled to me too a number of years ago.
Okay. Well, here's what I've gotten for this book. My guides want us to understand really who we are, and they want us to understand our relationship to God, Source, Creator, whatever terminology that you want to use. And so the hierarchy, so to speak, well, let me start with this. We've all heard that we're a spark of God, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
everybody has heard that. Well, what the Gigi are trying to say in this book is, well, here's how that happens. The Source, God, Creator has sparks, and those sparks are our higher selves. And then the soul is a spark from the higher self. But the higher self can have more than one aspect or spark. Our higher self can have many little aspects running around. They can be here on 3D Earth with us. They could be on 5D Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They could be in other dimensions, other planets, you know, all out gathering information, having experiences, doing growth-oriented things. The whole purpose, according to the GG, is to learn and experience all there is to learn and experience. So sometimes our higher self will have more than one aspect running around.
Right, which is interesting, because I had a friend of mine that used to say, you can check with your higher self on the other side, and she'll tell mm-hmm. you what to do. And I'm like looking at her like, yeah, what are you smoking? You know, which you can. You can check on the other side, which is connecting with your higher self. So I think you did give a good explanation in your book about that.
Thank you. Well, the higher self is the higher. I'm so glad you brought this subject up, because now I'm kind of getting on my soapbox here, but I can't help myself. So many people, they look at what you do, they look at what I do, and they say, oh, I wish that I could connect with spirit. But the bottom line is that we are all connected with spirit 24/7. We mm-hmm. just have to listen, and the spirit that we're connected with is our higher self. And our higher self, we can hear as our gut. We've all had, you know, gut instincts to do certain things, and
right.
that's our higher self talking to us, trying to help us make the very best choices that we can make for ourselves. And we can take it so much further than just a gut feeling if we will just sit down and meditate and listen. And that's one of the things that we wanted to accomplish with this book also. Instead of just saying sit and meditate, we wanted to give folks different ways to meditate so that they could connect not only with their higher self, but with their guides and with the angelic realm if that's what they want to do. So there's lots and lots of meditations and exercises in this book to help folks make that connection. But that said, again, I got to go back and say, you're already connected. What I
right.
should say is to wake up to the connection that already exists.
Exactly. You know, that divine self, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever. We're all plugged in. It's just we have to kind of put the lights on, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've been teaching a lot of workshops lately about connecting with spirit. And I'm going to say that one of the most difficult things that we have to deal with is to get past our ego. Because our ego is afraid to allow us to talk to our higher self. And it's because our ego knows that it's temporary. It's our conscious mind. Our higher self transcends our conscious and our unconscious mind. But the ego is just afraid. It's living in fear. It doesn't want to be pushed aside. So we have to tell our ego, it's okay. It's okay, baby. We're not trying to knock you out of here. We're just trying to enhance you. You know, just let me talk with my higher self. Because the ego is what puts up that blockade of, I can't do this. Or, this can't really be happening. I'm not really talking with spirit. Who is this? I'm making this up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But why would we make that kind of thing up? Why would we try to trick ourselves?
Exactly. No, we wouldn't. And mm-hmm. and the ego is there to protect us. But,
yes.
yeah, and sometimes it doesn't. It has to be kind of talked to and reasoned
yeah.
with.
Yeah, yes. And it likes to protect itself a little bit, too.
Oh, yeah, it does. It really does. And I find that interesting, because the ego, you know, some people want it to be suppressed, and I think you need to work with it a little bit. I'm learning, so.
Yeah, make friends. Make friends.
Make friends with your ego. It's not there.
Yeah.
It's there. It's part of you.
You spent your whole life making it what it is. It's based that your ego represents everything that you have lived through, every experience you've ever had, everything you've ever been taught or learned. There it is. That's the sum total of what creates our ego or personality. So, you know, we've had a big hand in creating it. Let's be friends with it and get it to agree to just kind of step aside. Everything's going to be cool. Let me talk to my higher self so I can have a conversation instead of just a gut feeling.
Exactly. And it does work. I've reasoned with my ego recently about different things. It does work.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to be conditioned a little bit, like we condition it, like you said. I find another section of your book, which I found, was the Akashic Records. I love this section because people don't realize that we do have kind of a blueprint for our life. You want to explain the Akashic Records?
Well, the Akashic Records,
okay.
That is like almost like, let's just picture the New York Public Library, only much, 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 much bigger, and, you know, no walls, and as a soul, we go on many journeys, and those journeys are incarnations. So every time we have an incarnation, we have another lifetime. Every lifetime we live, we're a different person. We're never the same person twice. That doesn't make any sense. So there has to be a record of our lifetimes, and we have a record, a permanent record of every lifetime that our soul has ever lived is in our aura. It's in our higher self. And it's also in the Akashic Records. And we can access those records to see who we were in the past. Now, my guides are very explicit about this. They don't like to tell me about my past lives because they know that I'll get all caught up in them and just want to know everything about them. But where knowing about past lives comes in handy is if we've got something that we just can't get past in this lifetime, a fear and anxiety that we just can't get past, a lot of time that is residual energy from a past life. And if we go back and we can access those records and we can see where this originated, then we can just kind of take a deep breath. Okay, that's where it's from, you know, and I can get past this. And when we get past something like that, those kinds of things will impede our spiritual growth. And once we recognize those things, put them aside, we can move forward faster. We can expedite our spiritual growth. So accessing those Akashic Records for the purposes of spiritual growth, I think, is just the best thing in the world. And you know what? I think once in a while to access them, to see about a past life or two that might be interesting isn't so bad either. We just don't want to get caught up in who we used to be because it's all about what we're doing right now that counts.
Exactly. And sometimes we do get caught up in that. And, yeah, I mean, and you learned with, you talk about Edgar Cayce. You want to mention about him a little bit because he's a Pisces like I am and his father's name was Squire like mine.
Edgar Cayce, the Association for Research Association for Research and Enlightenment,
right.
Out of Virginia. Well, I talk about Ruth Montgomery and Shirley MacLaine, but Edgar Cayce, I mean, he was just it for me too because he would go into a trance and he would be able to access the Akashic Records for people. And he wrote many, many books. Well, these books were really like whatever he channeled when he was doing this, he kept a written record of, and then all of that information would go into books. And they became books about Atlantis and books about how to fix your health. Because a lot of people, their health issues have to do with past life residual energy. And so he would go off and he would access those records and tell folks what they needed to do. And sometimes it was as simple as changing their diet. And he was just amazing the way that he did that. So, I mean, you really can't talk about accessing the Akashic Records without mentioning Edgar Cayce.
Yes, he was. He was a phenomenal. I read a couple of books of his, and he's a great guy. He, like I said, he's a fellow Pisces, you know.
So unassuming. You know, he didn't want any recognition. He just wanted to help people. I wonder if he was a walk-in.
Yeah, I wonder too. I would, yeah, because he was, he had an interesting upbringing as well. And, yeah, he, I don't know. I'm not getting anything from my guys right now, but let's talk a little about meditation, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can we use meditation in our daily lives, and why is that essential in today's world?
Well, from my point of view, from the point of view of these books that I have recorded for my guides, I don't want to say that I wrote them because that would not be fair. You know, I take dictation, and that's really what I do. From our point of view, meditation is a way to expedite your spiritual growth. It's a way to begin to make changes in your life so that you can live your life with less drama and less pain, so that you can start to recognize life scripts, because life scripts are really just a series of windows of opportunity to learn a lesson that we wanted to learn, but we missed it, and so we keep on inviting the same type of circumstances into our lives because we really, really, really want to learn that lesson. And meditation allows us to tune in and listen. It allows us to listen to our higher self and the direction that our higher self is consistently giving us. Our higher self is an internal GPS that just wants us to make the very best choices. And being able to hear what our higher self has to say is a great thing. And a little bit of meditation will do that. And this book provides some exercises to help folks do that. And I have to say this, though. Hearing what your higher self says to you and doing it, those are two different things.
Yeah, but sometimes they take a spiritual 2x4 upside the head and say, if you don't, the lesson becomes louder and louder.
Yeah, well, yes, and that's what they say about windows of opportunity. In fact, my first book was called Windows of Opportunity, and that whole book is about learning to recognize a window of opportunity when it's in front of us, learning to recognize our windows more towards the ground floor rather than the penthouse, so that we don't have to go through all that slap you in your face drama that we plan for ourselves because we really, really want to wake up. But, you know, meditation, in this new book, we talk a lot about meditation with intent and announcing to the universe what it is that you want, what you want to accomplish. It's a very easy, simple, and important thing to do. And you can announce to the universe, I'm going to meditate now, and I intend to meet my spirit guide. And then you can meet your spirit guide, and then you can ask your guide for messages. And more than that, you don't just have to take messages and blindly take dictation. You can ask for clarification. You can ask questions that you have. The goal of this book is to get folks having conversations with spirit, not just getting a gut feeling or seeing the same number over and over again or hearing the same song and wondering what the heck does that mean. This is about hearing Last Train to Clarksville for the 10th time this week and saying, huh, do they want me to get on a train to Clarksville, or is there something deeper here, you know?
Yeah.
And saying, you know what, guys, I just don't get this. I don't get what the message is. What is the message? We can do that. We can all do that. So meditation is a route to help us be able to connect with our guides and with our higher self.
Mm-hmm.
Automatic writing is another way to do it. The reason why I love automatic writing so much, besides being such a lazy girl, is that, well, maybe this is lazy too. You have a written record. You have a complete written record right there of everything that you've said and everything that they've said. And you can go back and look at that over and over and over again. Sometimes I go back and I read stuff that I got in the 80s and the early 90s, and I think, holy cow, I can't believe this, you know?
Yeah, I know. Sometimes if you look at your journals, I look at my back of my journals, I'm like, oh, my
mm-hmm.
gosh, I went through that, I went through this, you know, I learned about that. It's just, it's
keeping
just a good
journal and writing it down, I think helps those of us who, where we've got that, oh, I just can't believe that this is really happening for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that after a while, if you keep a journal and you start to look back at it, it starts to become very clear, yes, I am connected.
Yes, and it's just interesting, too, because, you know, you may have been a different person 10 years ago, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're like, wow.
Especially if you're a walk-in.
Yeah, well, or, you know, you've been through a lot. You cleared a lot of karma.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, there was a lot of karma here. Yeah. Believe.
But you got through it, right? And look what you're doing now.
Yes. Yeah, it was. I always say the first 2 years after my near-death experience was like trying to figure out if I had legs to walk on, because I didn't know if I was coming or going. It was just a very, very odd time. But I found my way. So we all find our way.
What year was that? What year was that you? Oh, see, the vibrational level of this planet has increased so much since then.
Mm-hmm.
So much. I think it's much easier for folks who are walking in now than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, believe me. Yes, it was. Yes, they're all coming in droves, too. Let's talk a little bit about, I like this analogy. Before we, you know, reincarnate or whatever, I like that analogy. We sit down with our spirit guide. Do you want to explain that a little bit, how we sit down
mm-hmm.
and determine
yeah.
what we need to do?
Absolutely. In Windows of Opportunity and also in the new book, it's very important to the guide group to get out the information that we're responsible for what happens in our lives. Because
right.
if we can recognize and understand and deal with the fact that we've chosen the experiences that we're going through, then we're more likely to wake up and get what the learning is, get what the experience is sooner rather than later. And then we'll learn these things with less drama, less pain, less tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the way that they've explained it to me is to kind of picture yourself at a conference table, at
mm-hmm.
a planning table, and everybody that you're going to have something to do with in your next life, the lifetime that we're going to plan now, is going to be around that table. You're going to have your guides are going to be there, counselors are going to be there, the other souls that we're going to interact with, people that we're going to love, people that we're not going to love, people that are going to create tragedy for us. We're all there planning what this is going to be. And they say to kind of look at it as the book of you, the
mm-hmm.
book of you. You're writing the book of you. And each chapter of that book would be dedicated, so to speak, to learning a particular lesson. So into that chapter, we will create and design and orchestrate and construct many, many windows of opportunity to learn that one particular lesson, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that if we miss the first opening, the first window, we miss that first time that we could learn that lesson, that's okay. Another window is going to open. If we miss that one, another window is going to open. And as you so eloquently said before, as you keep missing those lessons, they become, yeah more drama-filled, more difficult, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to learn those lessons. And the guides also say that when we are on the other side and we're planning our windows of opportunity, we plan some very interesting things for ourselves because we never think that we're going to get that far. We're very
mm-hmm.
cocky on the other side, and we believe that we're going to wake up the very first window that presents itself. But it doesn't always happen that way because, of course, we're not consciously aware here. You know,
right.
we have to wake up gradually. So that's how the planning and the windows of opportunity happen.
Oh, yeah. I remember listening back after my near-death experience. I went for every author. Sylvia Brown had a very good, back then it was cassettes or tapes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about how, you know, we plan, like you just said, you know, different things. And then we're like, oh, yeah, we'll throw a husband in there. We'll throw a relationship here. We'll throw, and then it's like, you look back at it, and you're like, what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
What I said to my guides. I'm like, what the hell was I doing? They're like, just keep going. Just keep going, Amy. It's okay.
They
it's
say
getting
also,
easier for you.
Yeah. They say we have our guides and counselors present also because a lot of times, we will try to bite off more than we can chew. It's very easy when we're on the other side to say, oh, well, we can handle all of this.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we get over here, it's a whole different ballgame. So they try to keep us from biting off more than we can chew. But that said, we are firmly in control. We are decisively in control of what it is that we're going to do in our upcoming lifetime. Nobody, they can advise us, but we make the final choices.
Yeah, and you bring up something else that's very important. We do have a plan, but what are the exceptions to that plan when things go out of hand?
Well, according to my guides, no one sits around a table and plans to be murdered or plans to be raped, and no one plans to commit suicide. Those things happen. For murder and rape, they say that it's kind of like, you know, like when your computer just kind of slips on and off, like a little synapse. Something goes wrong. Something happens in the brain. And a lot of times they say it happens to us during our childhood. Sometimes terrible things happen to us during our childhood. Things just don't go the way that they were planned, or we just can't handle them as well as we thought we could handle them, and things just go wrong. Something just kind of snaps, you know. And murder is just, it's such a terrible thing, and suicide is a terrible thing for the reasons, not because you're going to go to hell or anything like that, but because it kills windows of opportunity. Carefully planned windows of opportunity for, you know, maybe dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people. All of a sudden, these windows can't happen the way that they were planned because important components are now missing. They're gone. They're gone from the planet. And so when that happens, when there is a murder, our higher selves have to get together. They've got to reformulate these windows of opportunity that are so important to those who are still on planet so that they can still get the learning and opportunities that they want to have. You know, that they plan to have. So that's the reason. And they say too that most folks who do commit suicide, they never really think that they're going to go through with it. That when it does happen, it's like they wake up on the other side with, oh no, I didn't mean for this to really happen, kind of thing. You know, a lot of people like to threaten it to scare people.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Anyway,
that's
what they have to say.
And sometimes, I recently had a client lose a loved one through a suicide, and the person was on drugs and alcohol, you know.
So their brain was not functioning properly.
Yeah, I know, because he kept coming to me and he said, I shouldn't have done this. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what my guides must say, that, oh, I wish I didn't do this. And just so much has to be replanned when something like that happens.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but it happens.
But you know, that's why we have that's why our higher self is there to you know, to help with these things if necessary.
Yes, and that's and then they have their own stuff here. So how can we make the most of out of this this incarnation? Now we've talked about the past lives, the records, the Hall of Records, so on and so forth. How can we make the most out of this incarnation, though?
I think the first thing that we have to do is to recognize why we need to make the most out of this incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we're here now. We're here now. And we have things that we want to learn. We have situations. We are here to help other people learn their lessons. Other people are here to help us learn our lessons. And those things can only be accomplished in the here and now. The here and now is the most important thing. And I kind of got onto this big here and now rant when everyone was wanting to and expecting to just transition over to 5D Earth and kind of gave up thinking about what needed to be done here in the here and now, you know, and saying, oh, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to read any books. I don't want to go to work. I don't want to do anything because I'm going to transition. I'm just waiting to transition. I'm so tired. I just want to transition. But, you know, this is our planet. This is our species. We're here to help each other evolve. We're here to help humankind evolve. We're here to help our planet. Our planet is not a garbage can. So number one thing that we can do is to clean up after ourselves. We can recycle. You know, if we're walking along the beach and we see garbage, pick it up. I know that a lot of light workers don't want to think that their job description includes, you know, picking up garbage, but guess what? It does.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It does.
It does. Yeah, like I'll walk around, you know, my little home here, and you know, I'll find stuff outside, and it's like, who the heck, you know, especially you know,
Yeah.
young kids, you know, you just don't want to, you don't want the stuff to
No.
go around. It's good karma too. It's a good payback. So.
It is. It absolutely is. You're creating when you reach down and you pick up litter, you first of all, you're creating positive energy, number one, which is great. And number two, you are absolutely living in the here and now, because you're doing something you weren't planning to do. There it is. You're bending down. You're picking it up. You're not thinking about anything else other than picking up that garbage at that moment. Oh, there's garbage. I'm going to pick that up. You know, so you're being mindful. You're very much in the moment. And a lot of living in the here and now is about being in the moment. And, you know, we can create so much positive energy or so much negative energy with just our words, with our words. And I think that almost anybody that we see walking past us or that we're working with or talking to, we can find something positive to say. It should be something that's sincere. We should not be lying. You know, it should be something sincere. But you could say, oh, I love those shoes. I love the tone of your voice. I love the way you just said that. I like the way your hair looks today. There's something that you can find, and that creates positive energy between the two of you, and what you've done with that, with the person that you've just given a compliment to, you've made that person feel great. Chances are very, very good that that person is now going to go and compliment somebody else, and that way you've spread the positive energy. And smiling works like that, too. It's such a simple thing, and it sounds almost ridiculous to say out loud that smiling is one of the most important things that we can do. But when we smile, we're so in the moment. We're creating positive energy. We're making the person that we smile at feel good. And I don't care how grumpy somebody is, if we smile at them, they can't help but smile, too.
Exactly.
They can't help it, you know? And they're going to pass that positive energy on as well. So those are things. And, you know, random acts of kindness, that's another thing that we can do. It's such an easy thing to do. It just takes maybe a minute or a few minutes of our time to do something nice for people.
Exactly.
Just little things. It's the little things that mean so much.
Exactly. Little things mean a lot, and that's very true. Let's talk about, I'm jumping around, like I said, relationship villains. Who are they? I love that, relationship villains.
Relationship villains are not what they seem like. It's not the way that it sounds, that much I can tell you. Mm-hmm. Every window of opportunity, every situation that we plan for ourselves, so that we can learn an important lesson or to repay karmic debt, we have to have a catalyst to open that window of opportunity. And that's going to be a person. And that's what the GG calls our relationship villains. And they say that our relationship villains are really our closest friends when we're on the other side, our closest universal friends, because they're the people who just really, really want to make sure that we learn whatever lesson we have set out to learn. And sometimes it takes the people that love us the most to put on that black hat and play the role of the villain, because let's face it, anybody can put on the white hat and be the good guy. I mean, that's the easy job. But it takes somebody who really, really loves us to be a villain, because it's just a crappy thing to have to do. It's a crappy thing to be the person that hits somebody else and causes an accident.
Right.
You know? Or in my case, I can remember I lost two promotions because someone told terrible, terrible stories about me. And that was, I thought, somebody that was my best friend. And I wondered, why is she doing this to me? And in the end, I ended up getting a promotion that was so, so much better than either one of those two jobs. And if I had gotten those jobs, my life would have not gone, I think, in the correct direction. But at the time, it didn't feel like that, you know. At the time, it felt like she was just totally stabbing me in the back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I was in my law career, my paralegal career, I had somebody that did that. I lost my job, and that was okay because it forced me to do this work full time. So, You know, that's what people don't understand. You know, it's
yeah.
like, oh, you want to kill them. And, you know, even in our family, too, I have a relative who we don't speak because, you know, the horrible things. But you know what? It is what it is. It made me grow and forgive. And that's something that we all need to look at, too. You know, it's actually a blessing in disguise, some of the people in our lives, whether we want them or not.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the GG says that if you have, like, an ongoing argument with somebody,
mm-hmm.
or you have an ongoing argument with a lot of people where you have one point of view and everyone else has a different point of view, they
mm-hmm.
may all be relationship villains that are trying to open up a window of opportunity for you to maybe make a change in your attitude or your behavior, you know? And they say that car accidents always, that's a relationship villain creating a very big window of opportunity. And a car accident creates so many, sometimes even hundreds of windows of opportunity. They're very carefully planned. In fact, I just wrote an article about this for The Eden Magazine, and the title was Accidents Are Not Accidents. They are not accidental. They're very carefully planned things. But somebody's got to be the villain in them, right? Somebody's got to be the catalyst. And a lot of times the people that do bring tragedy into our lives, people that we just plain don't like, who annoy the heck out of us, they mm-hmm. are opening windows of opportunity for us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got a whole relative, you know, the relatives in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then they're a bunch of villains. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but they say that once, you know, with our families, once we learn whatever that lesson is that we want to learn, our relationships with those relationship villains become much more palatable, much, much easier. And that a lot of times, too, a relationship villain could be somebody that just bumps into our cart in the grocery store. It could be somebody that we just meet one time, have one interaction with, or they could be somebody that we have, you know, that are friends of ours. And sometimes, you know, people wonder, well, gosh, you know, I was such great friends with this person. Now, all of a sudden, we're not friends anymore. Well, it could be that your mission together is just over, you know? One or both of you learned what you were supposed to learn, and now you've gone on to do other things. So, you know, a lot of this information from the GG helps us understand and feel better about ourselves because we're not friends with someone anymore, we've lost touch with someone, it doesn't mean that we're bad people. It could very well just mean we've learned whatever lesson there was and it was time to move forward.
Exactly. And that's how I view people coming in and out of my life or whatever. You know, I learned what I needed to learn or they
mm-hmm.
needed to learn. So we got to wrap this up a little bit. Let's talk about karma.
Okay.
How can we acquire good karma? We talked about random acts of kindness. Is there anything else, you know, that we can do to eliminate the negative karma that comes into our lives?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't know that I would ever set out to acquire good karma. I think that we, you know, karma is energy. And it's either positive energy or it's negative energy. And the bottom line is that in the end, it has to balance. We have to balance our energy. So if we do something that's crappy, that creates negative energy, then we're going to have to balance that in the end, and that would be karmic debt. And we would either balance that in another lifetime or maybe even in this lifetime. So karmic debt or instant karma, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what we can do, rather than get up in the morning and say, I'm going to create good karma for myself today, we can take steps to avoid creating karmic debt for ourselves in the future, meaning that we have less that we're going to have to deal with in this lifetime and in future lifetimes. And I think one of the best things that we can do is to watch our words. To watch
mm-hmm.
what we do and to watch what we say, because we can say nice things in a snarky way, and that's not going to create positive energy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're in the moment, and this comes back to being in the here and now too, if we're truly in the here and now and we're paying attention, we're just giving a second of thought to what we're going to say before we're going to say it and how we say it, then we can say things in a nice way instead of in a nasty way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a great deal of negative energy is created from our thoughts and our words. and then also our actions. And these are all things that we have a choice about. We are in complete and total control of what we think, do, and say every single day of our lives. And, okay, for me, for instance, I have a terrible road rage problem. Terrible. And I live here in Orlando, Florida, and I-4 is awful. And people pull out in front of you. Sometimes I think that they are planning to drive right over me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and in the old days, before I understood about this stuff, I would give terrible hand signals to these people.
The Hawaii deluxe sign, yeah.
Yeah, and I would shout very ugly words. And you know what? Almost every day of my life, I would still have these things happening to me. And then when I learned about Windows of Opportunity, that was the first thing that came to my mind. And I thought, well, what if I change my behavior? What if when somebody pulls out in front of me, instead of giving them the finger, what if I smile and wave?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to do that. And you know what? It happens so rarely to me now that anybody pulls out in front of me, where it was like a daily occurrence over and over and over again. The only person that I could change was me. I had to change my attitude. I had to change my behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happened to me in the grocery store. I thought that I was shopping in the rudest grocery store on the planet. People were just knocking into my cart all the time. But you know what? I was being rude in the grocery store because I would never look anybody in the eye. I wanted to get in and out, busy, 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 just let me in and out. I wasn't saying anything nice or even smiling at anybody, nothing. And people were, you know, continually knocking into me. And my girlfriend, Terry Marinaro, said to me one day, you know, maybe it's you. Maybe you need to change what you're doing. And this was even before I wrote Windows of Opportunity. And I thought, no, it can't be me. It can't be me. It's everyone else, you know? But I did try it. I tried it. And I started to smile at people, look them in the eye, say hello. And all of a sudden, all this grocery cart knocking ended for me.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, Sherry, we're running out of time. Where can people find you?
Oh, www.sherrycortland.com. And from there, you'll be able to find your way to my Facebook. I post on Facebook every day, and my guides do something called Guide Group Fridays, where they post on Fridays. Who knew that my guides would love Facebook, right?
Oh, I know. Hey, social media.
That's right. So just go to my website, and that's the key to everything.
Oh, great, Sherry. Well, thank you so much for coming. Everyone's got to pick up your book, The Spiritual Toolbox. I love it. I love it.
Oh, thank you, Amy. Thank you for having me on, and thank you to all of your listeners. I'm just so honored to be on your show today.
Well, thank you, Sherry. Everyone have a great week. Talk to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.